In this edition of the podcast, episode 33, I have a really enjoyable chat with Patrick Hackett, who's Registrar, Secretary and COO at the University of Manchester. We learn first about Patrick's career journey from architect to working in the States at Royal Holloway, then to Reading, followed by a spell of consultancy, before a 13-year stint at Liverpool University, and then the move to Manchester, each time broadening his remit. The importance of the estate to universities is, perhaps unsurprisingly, a hot topic for Patrick, and as we begin, hopefully, to come out of the pandemic, he sees it as even more vital in terms of changes to working practices. We talk too about Manchester's experimentation with hybrid working, which was essentially being viewed as a big project with regular reviews of what works and what doesn't, and then refinements introduced. Flexibility and finding new ways to help staff focus on outputs whilst operating on the basis of trust were seen as key, but one of the biggest challenges was recreating opportunities for the informal interactions, which are such an important feature of working life. This work is part of a wider professional services transformation project in Manchester, which recognises the key role professional services staff play as part of a combined university operation with everyone pulling in the same direction. Finally, we look at the wider external pressures on universities, touching on the need for sustainable funding for research, before noting also the need for staff wellbeing to remain a priority. It's a great conversation, and I do hope you enjoy it. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. It's my enormous pleasure and delight this time to introduce Patrick Hackett. Patrick is Registrar, Secretary and Chief Operating Officer at the University of Manchester. Welcome, Patrick.
Hi, Paul. It's great to be with you.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us. We started with a very, very long job title, which is, I think, unique in the sector and obviously something else on top of all the other things that are special about Manchester. But before we get to that, can you tell us how you ended up there? Because you've worked mainly in higher education, I think, at a number of different universities. But how did you, what was the career journey to get you to Manchester?
Well, I suppose like all good career plans, it wasn't planned, might be the way to describe it in summary. I am an architect by profession. And interestingly, my oldest daughter, Katie, is a young budding architect. And in fact, she studied, as you know, Paul, with you for the undergraduate part of her architecture degree program. And so I, in some ways, I'm reliving my youth through Casey at the moment. And it, I have to say, it's really wonderful. But so I started out as a practicing architect. And during one of the regular dips in the construction industry, I found myself taking up a role as a project manager at Royal Holloway, University of London, back in 1991, which only seems like yesterday. And I took up that role on a fixed term contract basis. I thought this would be really good experience for me to understand the construction process, development process from a client's perspective. And I could take it back into my professional career. Well, of course, that didn't happen. I spent 10 long, very happy years at Royal Holloway, at the end of which I was director of estates and facilities. And then I moved from there to the University of Reading, where I took on those responsibilities, plus catering, residential and hospitality, commercial activities in the main. So I expanded my remit at Reading for 3 years. I then did a slightly unusual thing, because at that stage, if you were a director of estates or anything similar, the prospect of becoming the registrar was fairly remote, because you had to have risen up through the other parts of the ranks of what we now call professional services, but used to be called the administration. And so I was quite young at that stage, and I was offered this opportunity by a consultant who I had done some work with on behalf of the university, to join a company in London who wanted to set up an FM consultancy. And so I did that. I did it for 1 year. It was amazing in many ways. We made a huge amount of money. Many of the things that we say about consultants, both good and bad, are true, I can tell you from the other side. But at the end of the year, I really felt that the thing I missed most were the sleepless nights of being responsible for the delivery of professional operations. We could produce all these fine reports and recommendations, but then have to leave them behind without any confidence that they would be implemented. So I joined the University of Liverpool in 2005, again as director of FM initially. Whilst I was at Liverpool, I then was promoted into the chief operating officer role in 2008-09, I think. And then subsequently in 2013-14, I think I became deputy vice chancellor at the University of Liverpool. And I spent 13 very wonderful years at Liverpool prior then to joining the University of Manchester, where I am now as the registrar, secretary and chief operating officer. A rather unusual title, slightly perhaps reflects the way we do things in Manchester. We like to do things differently. And that's something very special about the place that I'm really enjoying now.
So it's a really interesting career trajectory, and as you say, it's quite unusual for someone to go from the estates and facilities side of universities and to end up as a registrar and COO. But I guess the fact that you've done it shows it can be done, and it makes it probably, I guess, much more likely that other people will do it in future, because it does show that actually it's eminently doable. The skill set is the one that you actually need anyway. It's a large part, presumably, of your current portfolio as registrar and COO anyway. And therefore, it's entirely appropriate, is it not?
Absolutely, it is. And I think it's much more common now than it was back then. But I've often been asked over the years, well, how did you do it? And it's very hard to say very specifically what I did. Some of it is obviously about luck and being in the right place at the right time. A lot of it is about hard work. But I think in my case, when I was at Liverpool, I expressed interest in things beyond the estate. I was really interested in the business of the university more generally, and I became directly involved in our online partnership with Laureate Education, which we built into a very successful 10,000 student operation. And I was also directly involved in establishing the university's new university in Suzhou in China, as you know well.
Yeah,
you
have, of course, one, yes.
Ningbo down the road. That was an amazing opportunity and an amazing experience. And it is now an amazing new type of university in its own right. So my advice to anybody who's out there who wants to become a COO is to think beyond your own professional boundaries and become interested and engaged in the wider business of the university.
I think that's a really excellent piece of advice, and I'd certainly endorse it. I do think also the other side of that is a recognition how central issues around the estate are to the long-term sustainable success of a university, right? They are elemental, right? They're not just about sticking a building up to put people in. They are absolutely fundamental to a university's strategic delivery in the long run. And that's why, people in those roles are so important in terms of their influence on university strategy.
Absolutely. And they are very challenging roles, because it's not as straightforward as saying, we'll try this thing new here now, and if it doesn't work, we'll just stop it and we'll do something else. Decisions that are made around the estate and infrastructure, and for that I also include IT, they are long-term decisions that you're making, and you need to have a very clear strategic outlook and a vision about the future, not just tomorrow or next week or not even next year, but 5 years' time, 10 years' time, 15 years' time. And interestingly, post-pandemic, maybe I shouldn't be saying post-pandemic, it doesn't quite feel post at the moment, does it, with the new variant? But as we come out of the pandemic, these questions are more important than they ever were before, because a lot of our assumptions and understanding about how people work, how they collaborate, how they engage with each other, is changing fundamentally. And it will have major impact on our estate and infrastructure in the years to come. And I think the opportunity for us in these leadership roles in our universities is to anticipate those changes and make decisions now that help us make the most of those opportunities in 5 and 10 years' time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And we'll come back to a bit of that in a moment. But before we do, let's just talk about Manchester then. So your role at Manchester, it's a traditional, you know, and there aren't many of them left, unitary position, isn't it, I think?
Yes, that's right.
So you're doing everything.
Yes, but with a very large senior leadership team. And one of the things I learned early on, and it has been reinforced for me over the years, is that we all work in teams. And we all work in multiple teams at any one time. So, yes, I'm the figurehead, unitary head of professional services. But that's more about a way of doing things, about how we think of ourselves as one professional service, not think about ourselves in old-fashioned, siloed directorate or even just functional lines, but thinking in a more integrated way about how we do things. And that, again, became more important than ever during the pandemic, when we had to work in different ways. You know, we had colleagues working in virtual teams, working with colleagues they'd never met before during the pandemic. And some of that experience has been really powerful. And we want to try and capture that now for the future as we think differently about how we're going to work together.
Okay, so I think that's a really important point, because it's very easy for those barriers to go back up again when you're between those kind of traditional teams that used to exist in the old world as people kind of come back onto campus. But I mean, that's a challenge in a small team, right? With a team of the scale that you've got, right? I mean, how do you get across that, you know, very clear vision that you just articulated to me there? How do you get that across your, you know, several thousand professional service colleagues across Manchester? Because it's a huge university, isn't it? I mean, it's one of the biggest in the country.
Yeah, it is huge. We'll debate with UCL whether we're the biggest or not. It doesn't matter. We're very large. We're very complex. And in many ways, we're highly devolved, which is a really good thing. It helps put decision making where it can best be made. It sometimes is challenging then when we try and be more efficient and consistent in how we do things across the institution. There's an ongoing debate about, you know, where should resource sit? How should we look at our processes? Should we be centralizing everything? Centralizing being a dirty word in this context, or should everything be devolved to the local area and meet local needs? And, you know, at the end of the day, these things are always about choices. They're not about what's the right answer, because there is no right answer. There are two things that we're doing in Manchester at the moment that I'm really excited about. The first is a great big experiment around hybrid working. And we are treating it as a project and an experiment that the project will help us explore, test, look at what works well around the institution. So we didn't come back and think, do you know what? People are not going to spend 5 days in the office anymore. Some people will be there all the time, but others won't need to be there. Here's a new set of rules to be applied, because that just wouldn't work at Manchester. Culturally, it wouldn't work, and practically, it wouldn't work either. So we've got this experiment where we have hybrid working champions all around the institution, all within a framework of key principles. And we're surveying our teams every 3 months throughout the 12 months of the project to see what works for the institution and what works for each of us as individuals. Because hybrid working, to me, offers the potential of a win-win for each of us as an individual and for our institution as a whole. And I think the future will be about refining those principles that help us shape what hybrid working should look like, but keeping it sufficiently flexible that teams locally can work in a way that works for them, which might be slightly different to other parts of the institution.
So I think that's really interesting. And I think, you know, we're all kind of struggling approaching that issue. And that's a really interesting approach you've adopted there. I wonder then, in that context, do people acknowledge that they're there to achieve particular outcomes for the university, and that their role is to contribute to, you know, so it's not just about where they work. It's actually about how they contribute in a meaningful way working with their colleagues, rather than just about, you know, whether they happen to be on campus or at home. Are you very focused on outputs, or have you got a more nuanced approach?
No. It's I think outputs are really important, and understanding why we're here and what our purpose is really important. And in some ways, that was better understood, more easily understood, when we were all sat together in an office on campus. It's not as easily understood when colleagues are working remotely. So the what we're seeing at the moment is that from the individual's perspective, this is going really well. They can see fantastic benefits for themselves. It's freeing up time for them to do other things that are not work related. For some colleagues, it's enabling them to work differently. They might start very early in the morning and finish earlier in the day, or they might start late in the morning and finish late in the day. But the benefits from the personal perspective are coming through quite strongly. But there are risks as well to hybrid working that we're also experiencing now. That sense of team spirit, that old cliche about the water cooler moments don't just happen by chance anymore. You have to create the opportunities for those chance encounters to happen. You have to think about it and plan for it in a way that we wouldn't have done in the past. And there are times when parts of the campus feel very, very quiet. Our headquarters in John Owens building, there are times you can feel like you are the only person in the building, and that's not good. It's certainly not good in terms of lone working and those things, but also culturally in terms of being a sense of being part of the wider team. So, you know, this requires very careful nuancing to make sure that we don't stifle innovation and creativity that comes from bumping into colleagues and having those chance encounters, whilst also not losing the benefits of hybrid working that we've experienced so far.
And I think I think that's absolutely right. And I think approaching it as a kind of project actually enables you, you know, gives people license to experiment as well, which I think is really, really positive. Because, you know, some of the challenges I think I'm sure your colleagues face as well is that, you know, people coming into an office to sit looking at a screen all day to joining in Zoom or Teams meetings just feels pretty frustrating if you're not meeting anyone. You know, if you are, you know, simply working in exactly the same way in a slightly different location. But likewise, there are challenges as well where you have those kind of mixed mode meetings where you've got some people in a room and some people online. And I think that getting to grips with some of those is one of the bigger challenges, because actually it isn't all as seamless as you'd kind of like it to be, would it? And you know, you get some of the benefits, but actually it feels a bit clunky at times and a bit hard to manage. But I'm sure we'll get used to it, won't we?
Yeah, I think it's a learning process. We're learning as we go along. I was very frustrated with mixed mode meetings at the very beginning, because they just didn't feel inclusive. Actually, as the months have gone on, and as chairs, and I include myself in this, as we're more aware that you have to manage a meeting differently when it's in mixed mode in order to ensure that everybody feels included, it has improved. The technology is important. You know, there's no doubt about that. As if that weren't true pre-pandemic, it's even more true now. And you know, as we're finding with Liverpool, we've had in Manchester, I beg your pardon, we've had some, IT issues at the start of our academic year, and they become much greater issues than they might have been in the past, given our absolute reliance now on the technology. What we're also finding is that the experiment is great at a local basis, but it's also exposing other things that we need to think about for the future. So your point about somebody coming into an office, one of the issues could be that they spend the whole day on Zoom, and that's bad enough, even though they're in the office. The other is that they're in that office on their own, so that it feels unfriendly and miserable. I think for the future, we need to think much more strategically about how we provide workspace for professional services staff. I'm not going to include academic colleagues now, because that opens up a different can of worms. But for professional colleagues, I could see a world where we provide really high quality workspace in a very different format to the offices that we have now, in a more centralized setup, where actually when you're coming in, you're working alongside colleagues from other departments, other faculties, other schools, and you're creating a different way for colleagues to have those water cooler moments than they had in the past. But that requires investment, and we're thinking about that now as part of developing our new estate plan for the next 10 years. And so I can see how we can make the working environment better for colleagues in a hybrid world. I can also see fantastic opportunities for institutions like ours to free up an enormous amount of space that will no longer be required in the future. And the challenge there for us is how do we make sure that that's not just a load of small pockets of space all around the campus. How do we free up a whole building that could be then repurposed for student support or student experience or student study spaces or research space or whatever, or indeed disposed of in the future in order to reduce our overall footprint? Because I know we're not talking about this today, but our carbon footprint is a major issue for us. We're committed to the Greater Manchester target to reduce our carbon use by 2038. And that will require us to do things as well. So in responding to hybrid working, I think we can tackle some of the other challenges that we face.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It does feel like it's adding a new dimension to working life and professional services. And I do think coming out of that kind of project you describe and the way that we're approaching it as well, I mean, there's a bunch of issues around, around the tech, around the kind of physical environment as well, but also around the kind of our traditional policies in relation to HR, where we have to adapt and adjust and change. But I think the biggest thing, which you alluded to as well, is the cultural issue, right? Of getting people attuned to the idea that actually there is a different way to work, which is collaborative, which is about working across boundaries, which is about managing your own time in a way that enables you to achieve what you're expected to achieve, but actually gives you more responsibility and autonomy as an individual, provided that you are contributing within a framework. And that feels like a big leap to me, but one that is eminently doable. And we've now got an impetus to do it. And then all those other benefits you described come along with that as well.
And the key to everything you've just described is something that we recognized early on in our experiment, and we talked a great deal about since, is trust. This is all founded on trust. If we can trust each other to deliver the outputs and the outcomes that we all want to achieve, then these other things are much less important, and it frees us up to think very differently.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. So looking beyond COVID then, I mean, you talked about the way in which you want to kind of see professional services working together across boundaries, et cetera. And I absolutely get that. And that would be fine if we weren't. And I agree with it and endorse it completely. And it's easier to do that when you aren't being challenged by 101 other external factors as well. So in terms of the things that you're kind of worried about or think are the biggest impingements upon, kind of your objective, I mean, how do you see the challenges facing the administration, professional services at Manchester, and indeed the university as well? I mean, is it all about money? Is it all about external regulation? Is it that engagement with the you know, the kind of regional and local communities. What are the big issues that are keeping you awake that you said you craved earlier on? You wanted those responsibilities.
Well, God, where to start, really? Because there's a long list, isn't there? You could add to that list, you just described things like cybersecurity, issues around a changing narrative institutionally about collaboration internationally, and geopolitical risks. So that there's a really, really long, long list of things. So I suppose where I come at it from here is that for us in Manchester, the second thing, the big thing for me at Manchester, apart from the hybrid working, is our transformation program for professional services, reshaping professional services. A five-year program, elements of which have been underway now for a number of years. That program encapsulates opportunities and challenges. So it encapsulates the opportunities to do things really differently, the way we do things. Manchester is very traditional in many ways. And in terms of our organizational model, our systems and our processes, we still, I know it's nearly 20 years on from the merger, but in many ways, we still have aspects of doing things that reflect our two predecessor institutions. We often say that we have, you know, 50 different ways of doing things. We have 28 different CRM systems. So we have a real opportunity to do things differently at Manchester that would improve our effectiveness, improve our support for academic colleagues and for our students, and enhance their lives, whilst also delivering significant efficiencies for the institution. And that deals with the challenges that we're seeking to address. You know, universities like ours, Paul, research intensive institutions, have got some interesting challenges over the next 5 to 10 years. You know, I think the current funding policy of our government isn't going to support sustainability in research intensive institutions in 5 to 10 years' time. You know, year on year, our costs are outstripping the growth in our costs is outstripping the growth in our incomes. And I think over the last 10 years, many institutions have masked that through growing student numbers. But at some point, you have to stabilize, and you have to generate sufficient cash surpluses to be able to reinvest in the institution for long-term success. And so in that sense, the University of Manchester is no different to any other research intensive. And we have a clear five-year plan that is intended to improve our cash surpluses to ensure that we can invest in our core goals, in our research, in student experience, and in social responsibility. And professional services will play a big role in that work, particularly, as I said, through reshaping PS, where we are continuing to reduce our operating costs in the institution to improve our cash surplus generation for reinvestment.
That's going to be a popular, isn't it? I mean, well, among the academic community, that idea of greater efficiency and reducing costs in professional services looks like nirvana, doesn't it?
On the one hand, it does. On the other hand, academic colleagues are worried that we will simply transfer workload onto them.
Yeah.
That we will take away the local expertise that they trusted and knew could do what they need to do when they needed it done. So actually, there's an issue of trust here as well, and a need for co-creation of the future operating model. It's something we talk a lot about at Manchester, that professional services doesn't exist as an end in itself. If our academic colleagues weren't here, we wouldn't have a job. Equally, if we weren't here, our academics wouldn't be able to do their job either. So we're all in this together. And having that sense of being in it together, having a clear goal, shared goal, is going to be crucial to success.
I completely agree. And I think it's frustrating that we do probably have arguments about that kind of thing more often than we should, because it's pretty sterile and unproductive, isn't it? Whereas, in fact, you're absolutely right. We're all on, you know, the team, which is the institution. We're all trying to do the best thing to enable our academic staff to do the best research, deliver the best teaching, our students to make the most of the environment they're operating in and that great academic input that they're getting. And we're trying to help create the conditions for that success and enable, you know, the university to continue to invest in those activities so it gets even better than it was before. And it is frustrating, therefore, to have those really dull arguments about centralization versus decentralization. You're too expensive. Why can't I do just what I want to do, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But it's part of the rich tapestry of university life, I guess.
I guess it is. I do think that, you know, one of the many, many downsides of the pandemic is that I think it has exacerbated some of those issues, that faculty versus PS, center versus faculty versus school. You know, when colleagues are really tired, frustrated, been through an enormous amount of uncertainty in their professional and private lives, you know, some of these tensions, what have, if we describe them like that, can become more acute. And we're very conscious of that in Manchester. That is, again, as we hopefully come out of the pandemic, there's a real recognition that well-being more generally in the institution needs to be a real priority for all of us. We need to think and not just assume that we will go back to normal. There will, we believe, be legacy issues for colleagues who've been through very difficult times over the last 20 months. And so well-being and understanding what's working and isn't working for colleagues. And that includes workload. It's not all about workload, but workload is definitely an issue. We need to tackle those issues. It's a real responsibility for all of us.
I completely agree. And I think that's a really kind of, you know, from what has been a very difficult period, it's actually a positive outcome, right? The focus on our people and their well-being is something that institutions actually do care about, in a way that we perhaps didn't a couple of years ago in quite the same way or to the same extent. So yeah, it's been really tough for lots of people. But if that is an outcome, that's a positive outcome from what has been a very difficult period. Patrick, one more thing before we wrap up. I mean, we've talked about lots of challenges and issues and things that you and your colleagues are trying to do differently. If you had a wish or you had a magic wand, what's the thing that would make the most, what's the one thing that you could do that would actually be, you know, if you were able to change it overnight, what would be the one thing that you would do? A completely unreasonable and unfair question, and I don't know why I'm asking it, but I will ask it nevertheless.
Maybe I won't ask it. I suppose if I could wave my magic wand, I would love everybody in our university to feel that we are all in this together. If that's how everybody in the institution felt, I think lots of our other issues would simply fall away.
I think that is a good aspiration and indeed an achievable one, you could argue. Yeah. Although, you know, academic institutions are not noted for their harmony and, you know, complete alignment on all things, you know, but who knows, maybe you will get your wish.
Yeah, I'm not completely unrealistic. I don't expect absolute harmony at all. In fact, I really enjoy the to-ing and fro-ing and debate around issues. So it's not so much health that issue about healthy debate. It's about an underlying feeling that we're all in this together. Yeah. And even when we debate and disagree, that we disagree well. Yeah. You know, underpinning it all, we are all in it together. And even when we disagree, we know where we want to get to in the long term.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, we will leave it. But Patrick, thank you ever so much for a really interesting discussion. We covered a lot of ground there, but I'm really enormously grateful for your time and commentary. But that was great. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. And as ever, it is such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course, and if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until next time.